And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Nothing, man. Just chilling. This is probably our latest podcast ever, so just hang in there with me. I'm an old-ass man, you know. It gets close to 9. I'm ready for bed.
Well, I'm doing pretty well over here, too. There was some excitement for me this afternoon. Hugh Freeze slipped into my DMs and asked me to take it easy on him. I thought he was going to send me some information for some high-class hookers, but unfortunately he did not provide that information. So maybe on our next interaction and...
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Hugh DM'd you?
He sure did. For those that didn't see it, I've retweeted this information, but Hugh Freeze was at the Arkansas War Memorial Quarterback Club, what have you, the Touchdown Club.
Yeah.
And he basically was asked, you know, why don't you have a job? And, you know, of course, he still won't own up to what he does. He just says he made a mistake. But he, you know, let's forgive him for something he won't even say what he did. But he also blamed the current climate in America is partly to blame. And I think he's talking about harassment and the mistreatment of women and how schools don't want to be involved with someone who is connected to that, even though he says he's not, but his name has been dragged through the mud. So I just tweeted that out as what a joke he continues to be. And that's when he DM'd me. But like I said, no juicy details.
Maybe, I mean, seriously, maybe it has something to do with him on this Christian platform, ordering up prostitutes with the school phone. I think that would be the reason he's not hired somewhere right now.
Well, no, Shane, it's because the current climate in America, and let's keep in mind, this is not one or twice. This is like over a 7-year period, so he's still got some repentance in my mind. I'm not buying his bullshit.
No. But, you know, let me ask you, if you're a gambling man just like me, over under 3 years, he's employed by, or he's a head coach somewhere.
He definitely will. I don't think he'll get that opportunity in the SEC that quickly, but he's a good coach. He's a good salesman. You know, he knows how to talk to people. He knows how to win people over, even if I think he's full of shit. But he is a great coach, and that's all that really matters at the end of the day to a lot of people. We've seen, you know, Bobby Petrino get chance after chance. And
Ohio State.
Ohio State's another great example, so... I could certainly see him at a smaller school and winning big, and I think even, you know, down the line of ACC school or something, I think we'll give him a chance, but I'm just not sure that he'll ever get that black mark removed from his name in the SEC.
Yeah, he may get that Sumlin job next year, you know. Talk about a dumpster fire.
Oh, poor Kevin Sumlin. And I had such high hopes for him. All right, Shane, let's get into the latest news here. On Monday, the SEC announced kickoff times and television information for the Week 4 games. So keep in mind, we're still in Week 3, so this is a week ahead, but the SEC always does this a week in advance to kind of, you know, it's determined by a number of factors, but largely, you know, they want to see what's the most attractive matchups. And I'm going to do a quick rundown here. So Georgia at Missouri, that's going to be the noon game on ESPN. Kent State at Ole Miss, that's going to be the noon game on SEC Network. Texas A&M at Alabama, that's been selected as the CBS SEC game at 3:30 on that Saturday. Then we got South Carolina at Vanderbilt, which could be a sneaky good game. That's selected for the 4 o'clock Eastern slot on SEC Network. And then we get into the night games, just some really good night games Week 4. Arkansas at Auburn, as well as Florida at Tennessee. Both of those games will be played either at 7 p.m. on ESPN or 7:30 on SEC Network. That'll be finalized Saturday evening, upcoming Saturday. So they like to see how these week three games come out before they officially announce those ones. That's the same thing as Mississippi State at Kentucky. That'll be 7 o'clock on either ESPN, ESPN2, or ESPNU. And finally, LSU under the lights, as always, Louisiana Tech at LSU. That'll be 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2 or ESPNU. Thoughts on that schedule, Shane?
I love it. I love Tennessee and Florida playing at night. I think that's going to be great, you know, great environment. I was kind of surprised, though, at some of the games, you know, especially the noon game we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you brought up a good point about Missouri and Georgia playing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Missouri potentially could be 3-0. Mm-hmm. Georgia will obviously be undefeated. I just think that I'd rather watch that at like 3 or 7 o'clock as I would, you know, an Arkansas game.
Yeah, and you know, those Missouri fans, they've been coming at me for, you know, obviously all week, all six of them on Twitter. But those that fan base, you know, I'm not trying to drag them through the mud here, but it just doesn't seem like they show up for these noon games. So you're not even doing your team any favors here. And of course, Missouri is not the one announcing this. This is the SEC and the television partners. But I just think you get a better atmosphere from Missouri fans if you hold that later in the day. That's the decision they went with. I probably would have went with South Carolina at Vanderbilt, even though I think that could be a great game. I would have put that at noon.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, not to mention it's in Missouri, so mm-hmm. What is it going to be like 11 o'clock over there?
Right, that's 11 o'clock central kick. So
jeez.
The atmosphere is just not going to be there for that one, and that's a shame for Missouri. If they have a shot in that one, they really need their crowd there. There may be more Georgia fans than Missouri fans at that one. And yet, like you were noting, that Florida-Tennessee game, I'm sure it has happened. But for the life of me, I can't remember the last time that was a night game. I'm thinking, when would that have been the last night game? Maybe like 2004 or something like that?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's always been the 3:30 game, you know, CBS. And I'm honestly a little surprised, but I mean, if Texas A&M didn't look so great against Clemson,
mm-hmm.
maybe this would have been a different situation. But I think, in their opinion, Texas A&M may give Alabama a run for their money. And so, yeah, more people are going to watch it. So
yeah, and obviously we saw Florida lost to Kentucky. Tennessee was embarrassed by West Virginia. So I'm sure that played into the decision. I don't think that those teams are necessarily that good. And I just don't think CBS wanted to put that nationally broadcast at this point. But I think that home field advantage really plays – it could be a big factor for Tennessee, and that's obviously a big recruiting weekend for the Vols, and they're going to be honoring the 1998 national championship team. So that atmosphere is going to be pretty rocking in that game, and I think Tennessee fans got to be thrilled about that one.
Oh, man, it's going to be awesome. I mean, the night games that I have been to that were Tennessee and Florida were always good. You know, this it doesn't matter what team you're bringing in. Tennessee and Florida always bring it week four. So it's going to be exciting, and it could come down to the end. And like you said, the home field advantage, it's a different environment at night. You know, Neyland 12 o'clock, Neyland 3:30, and Neyland 7 o'clock are three different types of atmospheres. You know, these guys are going to be lubed up all day long, and they're going to be ready for some football. So I'll be right there with them.
And another great night game, Mississippi State at Kentucky. Both those teams have cupcakes this weekend, so they should be undefeated. You know, if Kentucky fans, you know, bless them, they never show up either that well, in my opinion. But if they can't show up for an undefeated Mississippi State when they're undefeated, maybe they just never get a night game again. But this should be a good atmosphere and a really great game based on what we've seen after 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, when we started this week one, I thought that may be a trap game, and them beating Florida definitely put them up on the radar. So I don't think they're going to, you know, surprise Mississippi, but it's still going to be a hell of a ball game.
All right, Shane, let's get into, you know, the action coming up.
Well, real quick, too, that will be Mississippi State's first true test this season. You know, their schedule, if you look at it, the first four games are kind of a mockery. But when they play Kentucky week four. You know, this is their first true test, and it's on the road. Kentucky's hot, you know, so I'm really looking forward to that game.
All right, Shane, let's get into the week three action. Let's jump back for a moment here. And obviously the big game on the week, LSU at Auburn. So this is going to be a huge one for Coach O and his squad.
Go Tigers.
And during his Monday afternoon press availability, Coach O had some awesome words here for Joe Burrow. It kind of got me fired up. Here's your boy Coach O on his quarterback's linebacker mentality.
Go Tigers.
You know, Joe has the mentality of a fullback. I mean, he wants to go and hit him, a linebacker and stuff like that. But me and Coach Ensmaker are going to have a conversation with him.
All right, Shane, you got to like that. Joe Burrow, the linebacker.
Yeah, I love it. No, fullback, he said. He's got that fullback mentality, right?
Oh, yeah, okay. So, well, whatever you want to say, he's a smash-mouth guy. He won't slide. I got to tell you, man, the more I find out about this Joe Burrow, the more I like him. I think LSU needs that edge to him.
Isn't it comical? I mean, just in 2 weeks, this guy went from what's his name again to the guy, you know. That's college football for you.
Joe Burrow, also, he had some media availability today. He not only met with local reporters, but, you know, he was on SEC Network. So we're going to play this clip from Joe Burrow, and then we'll jump back in and discuss it.
Did you describe yourself as a gritty player?
Gritty?
Yes.
Yeah. I would say I'm gritty, I guess. I don't really know what gritty means. I don't think it's like the it factor. You don't know what it is, but there is you either have it or you don't.
There is an I and a T in gritty, so we will describe it as the it factor. That's how I describe it. And I appreciate the fact that you won't take hits, even though sometimes when you do lower your shoulder, I get a little anxious. Why is it that you won't slide?
It's just never really been what I'm about. I talked to Coach O this week, and he wants me to make sure that I'm going to take some hits off myself, but I don't really like how the Tom Brady slide looks. I think it makes you look kind of soft.
All right, Shane, so Coach O's trying to get that fullback out of his quarterback a little bit heading into these monsters he's going to face at Auburn. But still, I love the passion. I love the fight there from Joe Burrow.
Oh, I do too, man. And I think it's just funny, Coach O, I could just see him now and be like, come on, boy, you know, I only got two of you, you know. Because you remember, they all transferred. So he can't afford to have Burrows go down and going – toe-to-toe with some of these big defensive linemen at Auburn, you know, it ain't going to end well. I mean, that's just Newton's law. So he is going to have to learn how to avoid the hit. I mean, they've got a bright future down there in LSU. They got a quarterback finally. And the last thing you want to do is get him hurt. So, you know, as much as I admire the physicality of a quarterback, I want him back there. I want him healthy if I'm Coach O.
Now, let me ask you this quick question on LSU. Is there any chance that, I don't want to say they've been holding Joe Burrow back, but I don't really know if Auburn knows just what he can do in this passing game in particular, you know, if they kind of unleash him, because I don't think the game plan is just going to be running into that Auburn front. If Joe Burrow just kind of explodes on the scene here, I know that could be a difficult thing to achieve at Auburn, but, you know, What will that say for LSU if Joe Burrow comes out here firing and they get this win? How big would that be for this program?
Well, they're going to have to. You know, Miami, I think they were afraid to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the running game was working. The defense was working. The game script went as planned. And week two, he didn't have to do anything. Week three, though, I mean, this is Auburn. This is a contender for the playoffs. They're going to have to draw up some plays and let him – make this team not one-dimensional. So, I mean, if they're going to have a chance of beating them. So, I think, yeah, we are going to see a little bit more. It's a good sign. The swagger that he has, the players getting behind him, you know, that all bleeds onto the field. So, I just hope that we don't have a letdown from him.
All right, Shane, leaving Baton Rouge and heading to Athens. Get them dogs! Oh, oh, oh. It's where Kirby Smart, and despite his program getting, I think the biggest win in the SEC to date this year. He's not, like he said, he's not patting anyone on the back. It's just business as usual. And, you know, I think I still don't think Georgia's the new Alabama yet, but they're well on their way. And you hear some of those same kind of Sabanisms from Kirby Smart. We're going to play a couple minutes of Kirby Smart on the latest thing he had to say down in Athens.
I really think the approach and the deal is that the pats on the back sometimes are not real. Pats on the back are all conditional, and we're route into conditional love or conditional improvement. We want to improve unconditionally. We want to love unconditionally. And the way you do that is by trusting and believing in your teammates and getting better. And we're going to try to sell this team today, this week, and every week on getting better, because we can't control all these outside forces. We can't control what other teams do. We can't control what people say. All we can control is how we work. And if the leaders buy into that message and understand that we have to get better to get where we want to go, then we usually tend to do that. Believe in what we tell the players, which is playing to that standard and playing like the scoreboard's not there. So if you coach the same way, then the expectation for the player that goes in, whether you're up or down, is exactly the same.
All right, Shane, Kirby Smart's just drilling into, you know, his coach speak here, but I think that's the way he runs his program, and he's got his team humming on all cylinders right now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you got to. You can't let these guys get the big head. You beat South Carolina. Was South Carolina as good as we thought? Maybe they weren't, you know, and that's when you get in trouble. I don't think they'll be tested this week against MTSU, but if they go in that field and they just think that they're going to, if they show up, win, you know, that could catch them in the, you know, a couple of these games in the SEC. So I think that's kind of the mentality he's wanting to give the fan base, just, hey, we're going to keep working. You know, these boys did good, yeah, but they could have done better, you know. And that's what you got to have, you know, if you're wanting to be the number one team in the nation.
Now, let me ask you something, Shane. I don't want to get jumped too far ahead, but just, you know, not like you're making a proclamation here, but someone at work asked me today if I thought anyone on Georgia's schedule could beat them this year on the regular season. If I ask you that, what are your thoughts after that big win at South Carolina?
Can it happen? Absolutely. I mean, this is college football. This is SEC. I mean, if you come to a game unprepared, you're going to get smoked. I won't forget one of the worst games I ever saw was in Neyland Stadium in 2001. And, you know, Georgia came up. We were supposed to just handle them. I think it was an earlier game. The fans weren't really into it because we were just expecting the victory. And then that's the hobnail boot play. I don't know if you remember that, but
old David Green, I think it was.
Absolutely. I mean, here it is. You got a team that you were expected to win, and it wasn't going to be a question. And then they screwed everything up. I mean, we made a run there at the end, but it wouldn't even been a question. We should have beat Georgia that game. So yes, can upsets happen? Yes. And it really happens. It really is about the players. And this is what coach is hitting so hard on. If you come in expecting to win and you're not prepared, but that other team is, all it takes is a couple turnovers or big plays or something like that, get the momentum up, the fan base into it. Next thing you know, you're behind the eight ball. So as far as their schedule, the ones that concerns me is Auburn, obviously, because I think talent-wise they're the closest match. And you can't count out LSU, you know, because like you said earlier, it's going to be in LSU, probably a night game. So if you come unprepared to either one of those two teams, yeah, there's a chance.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there. I think those are the only teams that potentially match up with them athletically, and like you said, and in the trenches. So, I mean, that's the key, I think, to beating Georgia this year. Not saying that they're going to just sweep everybody, not saying they're going to lose those two games, but those are two that I think if they do not play their best game, they could be taken down.
Yeah.
All right, Shane, leaving Georgia, we're going to head back to College Station.
Giga Maggots.
Where Jimbo Fisher met with the media today, and, you know, it's coming off that the close loss to Clemson, but it felt almost like a win for the Aggies. And Jimbo Fisher led off his press conference with saying, you know, he's damn mad. He's not happy about anything. Doesn't believe in moral victories. But after that, you know, he was asked about just why he gets so animated or passionate on the sidelines. And I thought this was a great response. So we're going to play this quick clip from Jimbo Fisher, and then we'll discuss it.
This is a family. We're all in this together. This ain't coach against player. We're all in this together. We're trying to accomplish one goal. And sometimes, you know, it do get emotional. Football is just a game of passion and emotion. Everybody says, well, sometimes you lose your cool. Sometimes doing that keeps people's cool. Everybody acts different. Some guys are calm and cool, and it doesn't bother them. Some guys that can come out like that and be processing the game 100 miles an hour, and there's guys that talk and play, there's guys that are quiet and play. You know, my demeanor, I show my emotions. I don't have a problem with it. Sometimes I wish I didn't do them all the time. Wish I didn't do some of the things you do, and we all do.
but I love the kids. And I know how hard they work, and you get them in a position to be successful. I'm right there with them. We're all in this thing together. And while I push them and challenge them, and at the end of the day, I want to hug them and love them. I mean, that's coaching, man. That's why you coach, the relationships. And this is all of us together. We're going to work our tails off, but we're in the boat together.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, the more I hear from Jimbo Fisher, the more he impresses me in these settings. What was your main takeaway from his talking about why he's so passionate on the sidelines?
I'll tell you what, man. Jimbo is a breath of fresh air, you know? I mean, you listen to these coaches like Pruitt, like Kirby, like Saban. It's just, I was watching Saban's conference not too long ago. It was about 2 minutes, 3 minutes in. I went to check an email. Next thing I know, it's 10 minutes in, and I don't remember anything he said just because it's just blah, blah, blah. It's the same, you know? Jimbo's like the total opposite. He's passionate. He kills it at the podium. And not saying that makes him a better coach. It just makes him say the right things. He's great at telling you what you want to hear, you know. And I think that's why you're going to see a lot stronger recruiting classes coming out of Texas A&M for that reason alone. It's just because he can hook you and bring you in. So, but he did say the right things, you know. He's bought into these players. The players have bought into him, and it's looking good. It's showing on the field. They should have beat Clemson. They didn't, but they did show that they can beat anybody.
Yeah, and speaking of buying in, I think the main guy there, you know, he got Kellen Mond to buy in. Now Kellen Mond's getting the rest of his team to buy in. And, you know, flipping the script there, Jimbo Fisher has obviously bought into Kellen Mond. Fisher had some interesting comments on what he saw in Kellen Mond in that big game, his coming out game there. And we're going to play these quick clips from Fisher on Mond, because I just was pretty impressed when I heard them.
I think here's my thing about quarterback, and I'll say this. You can take a film, and I can sit down on a film with you, and he could complete a pass. And you can say, well, that guy's more open than that guy. That guy's more open than that guy. That guy's more open than that. You, when you actually throw the ball as much and do the things you do, it's just what the concept of the play is called with the defense and also what you're trying to intend to do by the situation. You know what I mean? There's always those situations. And go watch Tom Brady do the same thing. Go watch Jim Kelly do the old Jim Kelly film. Go watch any Aaron Rodgers. You can go watch them all and say that. I mean, so there's all – because anytime you make the large sum of decisions that a quarterback makes during the game – and then with the other distractions, and also a thought process of the preparation going in, but what he's thinking, how he's thinking, what a defense. I don't know if people really appreciate the multiplicity of things that goes through a quarterback's mind within about 2.8 seconds and to be able to execute. And I'm not saying that. It's an amazing factor. I mean, it really is, till you've ever stood back there and had – then you have four guys like they had running at you and doing some things. So I think that's part of quarterbacking in general. But I'm going to say this. He never come off the field at one time and didn't know what was going on. Didn't know come out the field, could process everything, tell me what they were looks like, got you. When you made communication with him, his eye contact, what was happening, why he did something, why he didn't do something. I mean, his whys, even right or wrong, which is great. And then some of the – even if they were a little bit wrong, I said, I understand why you thought that. Now you got to do this. I mean, as from that – his composure standpoint, his ability to process information, I thought was outstanding as far as how he was seeing things and communicating with us on the sideline.
All right, Shane. So, you know, like I said, Fisher, he's loving what he's seeing from his young quarterback. What was your main takeaway from hearing those comments?
That's what you want to hear. I mean, this coach is a quarterback guru, if you ask me. And, you know, he's coached a lot of great talent. And I don't think I've ever seen – of course, I didn't follow him as much when he was at Florida State, but I'd never saw this, you know, coming out talking about Jameis Winston or any of the you know, quarterbacks he's had down there. Yeah, I mean, he's all in on Mond, and the guy looks great. The guy looks like he's a seasoned vet out there. So bright days are ahead for him.
All right, Shane, going from a high to a really low, let's jump to Gainesville, talk about some Florida football, because Dan Mullen met with the media on Monday as well. And, you know, he just noted you know, about the culture change at Florida. It's kind of something we hammered home on the last episode. Well, had they won that game, it still wouldn't have mattered, but because the issues are still there. Dan Mullen went into a lot of that, but one thing we harp on him is his kind of his butchisms, as I like to call it, and he had a classic one here with he's what he called experience misses. So here's Dan Mullen on how or what he saw in Felipe Franks on Saturday.
You know, I thought he missed some things. There weren't big misses, just experience misses, you know what I mean? With reads as you go through progressions and when you can take certain reads.
All right, Shane, have you ever missed a experience, or have you ever experienced a
yes.
experience miss?
Absolutely. I mean, there's been a few times that I wish I could go back and experience something, but Coach is on the hot seat. I'm not saying that he's going to get fired, but he is on a platform right now. The fan base is questioning the coach, the media, the social outlets. They're all on him. He doesn't do well under lights. You know, like we were talking about Jimbo down there. Dan is the total opposite. He's squirmy, and I think he says everything that comes in his mind without thinking about it first. And this is obviously one of those. And coming from Butch Jones with his mental reps and his champions of hearts and all that stuff, this sounds all too familiar. So I see why you say Butchism.
You know, and one thing you got to keep in mind with Dan Mullen here, you know, think about these last Florida coaches. I mean, Jim McElwain saying he's getting death threats from the fans. They got rid of him. Will Muschamp, who seems like he is a pretty solid coach at South Carolina, but they ran him off pretty quick after you know, as things started going downhill. You got Urban Meyer faking heart attacks, getting out of town after, you know, running the program into the ground. Steve Spurrier. I believe at the end of his I can't remember his exact quote, but it was something like, you know, hell, if we don't win every damn game, these fans are up in arms. And, you know, he's winning 10 or 11 games every year. And I don't know, this fan base just expects so much. They start losing to Kentucky. We run down the schedule here. They're going at Tennessee coming up in 2 weeks, at Mississippi State, LSU, at Vanderbilt, Georgia. I mean, this is a damn gauntlet. And if the Gators don't come out on the other side with a great record, I'm not sure how this thing's gonna play out here for Mullen.
No, I don't either. I mean, they expect a lot down there. Have you ever been to Gainesville? You used to live down near there, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
And there's nothing else. It's football. That's why this fan base is so passionate, because they have nothing else down there. And a lot of teams can relate to that, and just being where they're from and stuff. But Florida was there. They've won national championships not that long ago, and they're in this slick, just, you know, like kind of like Tennessee. I hate to compare them, but they're, you know, they're in a 10-year slump right now. And it, you know, if you don't see any improvements, you know, when you bring in a coach like Dan, you expect him to fix things immediately. But you have to understand that the players he has on that team isn't his, you know. He's just had one off season with these guys, and maybe he does, you know, get them in the right direction. But he comes out and he says stupid stuff at the podium. It makes you just like even feel even worse about him, you know.
And I just got to tweet those out. But
exactly. I mean, keep bringing them, Dan. It's a lot of material for me on Twitter. So, but I don't know, man. Let me ask you this. At the end of this year, Florida will have how many wins in the SEC?
I think they'll probably be 4-4 in the SEC.
Okay. And at the end of this year, does he still have a job?
Oh, yeah. They're not going to get rid of him 1 year.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious about your pulse, because I feel like it's the same. Like, let me ask you, since you got the schedule there, which four do you think are going to be there? I mean, because it's changed. I think you had them a little higher at the beginning of the year. Now that they've got one loss in the SEC, mm-hmm. who are the four wins that you see?
I'll give them Tennessee, mm-hmm. Vanderbilt, right. Maybe South Carolina and Missouri.
Mm. See, I don't see that. I think they're going to drop one, if not two, of those games you just mentioned. Maybe that's me. Maybe I'm just, you know, I'm a homer of Tennessee and I don't like Florida, and it's kind of bleeding into this conversation. But I don't like the direction they're going. I mean, watching that offense, it was so sluggish. It was, it was not the high powered offense that we saw when he was at Mississippi State. So I just think, and he doesn't have the defense that he had at Mississippi State. So I just think that this Florida Gators are in for a long season.
Well, we could have said the same thing about Auburn at this point last year. They lost 6-14 to Clemson. They went on to win the West. So, you know, it can be done. Missouri started the last year at 1-5, and they went on a 6-game winning streak. So things can get done. I think we tend to overreact, and I think you're not giving enough credit to how good Kentucky is. I've been kind of singing their praises for a long time. You know, obviously Florida looked terrible, but there's a lot of time to turn it around. If they get an upset, I don't even know if it would be an upset, but if they beat Tennessee, maybe they get the ball rolling. He knows everything about that Mississippi State school. Maybe they can beat them somehow. So I'm not ready to throw in the towel just yet.
Well, maybe it's because Florida's coming in town next week and I'm already prepping, you know?
All right, now let's jump to a program that Florida thinks it should be and go to Tuscaloosa where
Roll Tide!
Nick Saban, he also met with the media today. He didn't have a whole lot to say, but I did think it was interesting, basically, you know, for a guy that, you know, preaches every game matters, not to look ahead. He's saying the real season starts now. So here's Nick Saban on Alabama entering in the SEC season.
You know, the real season is really starting now. I think that SEC play coming up, we've had some gifts given to us in the first couple games, and I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the players have to know the importance of stepping it up a notch in terms of level of preparation and what we need to do to continue to improve and to be able to play well against a very good team on the road.
All right, Shane, so I don't know if you heard this stat. It's been going around, but, you know, obviously Alabama scored 51 in the opener, 57 against Arkansas State. It's the first time in Alabama history since 1925 that they've opened the year with back-to-back 50-point games.
Golly.
And now Nick Saban's saying the season starts. So, my God, what are they going to do to Ole Miss here?
I honestly, man, I don't know. I think this may be an 80-point ball game because, like I said, Mississippi State needs to just onside kick after they score. I don't know, man. I don't know. I think that this game's going to be.
Should Alabama even bring their punter?
No, they definitely leave all their kickers at home. They suck anyway. So just go for it on fourth. Why not? You know, that's what I'm thinking. I hope that this is a great game. I really do. And if Alabama is going to run a high-powered offense against Ole Miss, I think that's what Ole Miss wants. You know, they want a shootout. They don't want this thing to be a grind game that's low points and trying to rely on your defense because obviously Ole Miss doesn't have one. So a shootout, yeah, I think they would welcome that, and I hope that's what we get. I just think Alabama has way too much, though.
Okay, so leaving Alabama to another school that's kind of in turmoil right now, trying to build its way back up. Let's jump to Fayetteville, where Chad Morris facing some tough questions after that Colorado State loss. That's a game, you know, they had it in complete control. They collapsed in the fourth quarter. I'm kind of ashamed to admit I didn't put two and two together on the last episode because this is something that obviously was part of the Brett Bielema era. That was kind of the beginning of the end for old Brett when the end of the, 2016 season, they had the big lead against Missouri, blew that game, had the big lead against Virginia Tech in the Belk Bowl, blew that game. And that was just the beginning of the end. And, you know, much like we're seeing some of these programs, Florida, Tennessee, you know, their players have to buy into the new staff. It seems like Arkansas is still in a very fragile mental state. So here's Chad Morris on just trying to – he's got to change that culture. He's got to get the Razorbacks out of that mentality of fourth quarter, oh, no, here we go again. So here's kind of a somber Chad Morris after on Monday.
Yeah, I think that the biggest message there is it's all about the little things. It's the attention to details that when you're up, how you handle success. We did not handle success well. We lost our focus. We lost the attention to what got us to that point. And, you know, the ability to create a sudden change moment, to be the ability to just come away with any type of points out of that is a whole nother game. We were one stop and one score away from that thing being over with. And when you lose focus and we lose the attention to details, that's the message. And it's not going to change. It's not. It's the way we address it every day. It's the way we address it on the field going into the fourth quarter, that it's all about the finish. It's how we train, and that we train for moments like this. And this is – at some point, we've got to break this cycle. And there's going to be a moment that we're going to break it. But at some point, it's there, it's evident, and we've got to break the cycle. And you know, I don't know what's happened in the past, and that's but this is on my watch, and this is – how we approach things. And as I shared with you earlier, it starts with accountability and it starts with me. And hey, it's right here. It's right here on me. And I'll continue to address it every day. I'll continue to hold the coaches. I'll continue to hold the kids accountable. And I assure you that we'll get that fixed.
All right, Shane, I think the reality is hitting home with Chad Morris on just what he's got, you know, how big of a job this is in Fayetteville. What was your main takeaway from his comments here?
Yeah, I mean, these players were there last year, and they experienced those fourth quarter losses. And it's hard, you know, if you have one or two of them, because every team's had this where they had the lead, they should have won the game, and then something happened and they blew it. And it's tough to get your players bought back in, you know, like, mm-hmm. because every game you go to, you're just expecting, okay, yeah, we're doing good now. And then if they do good, it's, oh, here we go again. You know, that's not the mentality he wants to have in Arkansas, and he shouldn't. They did blow this game. And hopefully they bounce back against North Texas this week.
And I think what it's really going to take for them to kind of turn the page is kind of the opposite to happen. I think they got to be in a game to where it looks very bleak and then have a fourth quarter comeback and win the game. I think that would be the perfect recipe to kind of turn things around. And if Chad Morris's offense gets clicking, I have got faith that they can get that done.
That or just stay on the gas, you know. Mm-hmm. If they're playing North Texas and they're up 20, 30 points, just keep going, you know. Just put it in your backups if you have to, but keep throwing the ball. Keep moving forward. Don't get conservative at the end and expect to win.
All right, Shade, so let's leave Fayetteville and jump to Knoxville, where Jeremy Pruitt also met with the media on Monday. And, you know, again, you know, he's from the Saban smart tree, doesn't really say a whole lot of interesting things. But the most interesting note I thought from his press conference was his notes on the offensive line and why he's playing so many guys there and everything. They're obviously still – you know, they're struggling at times to get pushed against ETSU. So here's Jeremy Pruitt on his offensive line play.
Would you like to get to the point where you got five guys that you roll with throughout most of the game, or are you pretty comfortable going throughout the season rotating in a few guys?
Well, I think a lot of that depends on who the five guys are. You know, you want to play your best players. If there's not much difference in the guys out there, then you might as well play multiple guys. To keep them fresh. So I think we're still figuring out who we are up front. We're making strides in the right direction, but we've got to continue to improve.
All right, Shane, what are just your immediate thoughts when you hear about old Pruitt talk about the O-line?
I'm disappointed. You know, the thing was, in the offseason, there was a little pet. We got Trey back, and we got Kennedy, and next thing you know, they're talking about the offensive line may be the best thing that we have. They've just not been impressive at all the first few weeks. And I don't see it slowing down. And this Pruitt, what he's saying is, if I don't have five great guys, I might as well rotate five shitty ones. It's kind of what, you know, or 10 of them, you know. So that's kind of what I took from it. So that's not too convincing for me. I want him to come out and say, yeah, we were trying to find the best five, and I think we got it now, and we're going to move forward, and this offensive line is going to continue to grow. But he came out with the total opposite. Just, I don't have five, you know. I have four or three, whatever.
Yeah, I think at this point he's just kind of hoping, he's throwing guys out there into the fire and hoping they emerge, hope they develop and just get better with reps. And, you know, it's still like we said with Florida, it's too early to make declarations here, but the way they've been playing, they're going to get dominated if they play that way in the SEC. So, you know, they'll have another week of film to work on, another week of practice. They got UTEP. They should dominate UTEP before that Florida game. And like you said, Florida may be the worst team in the nation. So,
well, I want to see them come out with five against UTEP, and I want that to be the last five on the field. You know, if they can do that and they can just find the right crew, because some people are better at tackle than they are at guard, and some people are better at guard and tackle. You got to figure it out. But we've had multiple weeks to try to figure this thing out, and we haven't. And UTEP's our last step before conference play. So if it's going to happen, it's got to happen this week.
All right, Shane, final nugget I've got here. Let's jump to Starkville with Joe Moorhead. He, too, met with the media on Monday, and I thought the most interesting thing from that, the senior running back, Aries Williams, he was notably absent from the Kansas State game. Not that they really needed him, because old Kylan Hill emerged. He was SEC Offensive Player of the Week for his performance. He had over 200 yards rushing, two touchdowns. He was straight beast mode. But Joe Moorhead was asked why Aries Williams didn't play, and I thought these were some really interesting comments, so we're going to jump to this real quick.
Yeah, he did not get a snap. You know, I actually just got done meeting with Aries. You know, on this situation, but kind of in general, from a broad strokes perspective, you know, playing time on Saturday is dictated by really your performance during the week and accountability and all those things. And, you know, based on this week's body of work, you know, we felt it was Kyle and Nick Gibson, you know, who did the best job and deserved the repetitions on the field. So talked with Aries. We're going to get rolling again on Tuesday and expect him to have a great week and, you know, be getting a good amount of snaps and kind of contributing in a positive manner. Love him. Great kid. And he's going to have a great season moving forward.
All right, Shane, so this is the second guy, you know, second senior, where Joe Moorhead has basically sat for not getting it done, you know, outside of the practice field or off the field or what have you. What does it say about Joe Moorhead that he's got no hesitation sitting star seniors if they don't do what he's asking them?
Yeah, I mean, this one kind of, out of all the news that came out today, this one's the one that kind of shocked me. And I don't know, because I'm hearing two different things. And let me get your opinion on it. I've got one side that's saying they realize that Aries isn't number one. He isn't numero uno anymore, and maybe they want to save a red shirt so he could transfer. Mm-hmm. And then the other one saying, okay, this guy pretty much, you know, expected to walk in and play, and he didn't practice well, and here we are on this side. So it was more of an example. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one, but I just kind of feel, you know, if you're a senior running back, I think it's hard for me to imagine he's going to be transferring at the end of the year to do what, to play running back again. Like, he's working for a head coach right now that just developed the number two overall pick in the NFL draft in Saquon Barkley. And from what I understand, he's also developed some other guys at other schools. So, I mean, he's working with the best guy to probably get him in the NFL now. Aries Williams is coming off 1,100-yard season, so he's got a ton of talent. He was the main running back for the Bulldogs last year. It looks like Kylan Hill has kind of passed him up a little bit, but, you know, I don't care how good you are, unless your name is Derrick Henry, you just can't survive in the SEC with just one running back. So I think Mississippi State, if they're going to do the big things they're hoping to do this year, they're going to need Aries and Kylan and everybody on that roster to come together. So I don't know. I think this is just Joe Moorhead setting the tone about, you know, I don't care who you are. If you don't do the right things, you're not going to play here. And, you know, he's not doing that to just be a hard ass. He's doing that because if they don't do what he's asking, they're not going to be successful. And he obviously has the blueprint for getting these guys to get the most out of them and turn into NFL players and win big at Penn State. He won big at Fordham, and looks like he's winning big at Mississippi State. So I think they'd be wise to just kind of do what he's asking here.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, man, this is huge. Week one, they did this with Fitz. The backup comes in and performs well, and they do it. Second week, running back, sit the number one running back, and Hill comes in and kills it. So I think you got to feel really good about your coach because he's developing everybody on this roster. It's not just the ones. It's the twos. They're stepping in and not just filling in. They are just knocking it out. So, I don't know, man. This may be a wake-up call for him, or he may have just lost his job.
All right, Shane, that's all I've got on the news front. You got anything you want to discuss before we get off here? Or before your phone dies, I should say?
No, I think that's about it.
All right, Shane, I guess that's going to do it. And if, again, as always, if you made it this far, please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star heart review, give us a written review if you wouldn't mind. That really, really helps us out. And if you got any mailbag questions, anything, shoot us our way. And as we mentioned on a previous podcast, we now have a Reddit page. We got Reddit.com/thatsecpodcast. So by all means, subscribe to that. Come and join the conversation. And I think that's all I got, Shane. I guess I'll catch you on the next one. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, buddy. Go Vols. You know, if they're going to have a stretch at this... Ah, shit, I'm fucking rambling again. Sorry.